Okay, I hit record too.
Okay, because I know we can do it. You want to know why I know we can do it? Because my word of the year is faith. We talked about this last December when we did like the year in review and preparing for next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, like one of the things I want to do is I want to have faith that I have the skill to figure out these. I don't remember what I said now. I have to go back and listen to it. But it was essentially like, I have the faith in the fact that I can do it and I can do it well if I just let myself do it instead of stressing out about it, you know?
That is such a... I know that this... I feel the urge to provide a disclaimer. I'm just going to let it happen. It's a meta skill where you have the... It's like the idea that once you've put yourself through the transformative experience of mastering something, that now you are more able to master other things because you know how hard it is and what it takes. And you also know that there's this feeling of uncertainty, and the only thing that gets you through to the other side is believing that it's possible. You did it once before and all that kind of thing.
Right.
That kind of... it's funny. I'm still chewing my way through the book Reality is Broken by Jane McGonigal. And it's brilliant. And that's what's taking me so dang long, because I'm reading it very slowly and highlighting, like, it's almost dumb how much I've highlighted. The whole book is glowing yellow. It's crazy. I'm like, how could you have this many sentences on a page crafted so well and be this brilliant? What the heck?
Jane McGonigal is the game informed design person, right?
Yeah, basically she's I believe she has essentially degrees in like game design and psychology and probably computer science or whatever. And
okay.
I don't know. I do not know. Her academic background is nothing to sneeze at, that's for sure. And she's very knowledgeable.
She did some very widely circulated TED Talks on what was then called gamification. Now is, what is it, gameful intended design?
Or designing with gameful intent, or designing with game intent. But it's... whatever. That's like, in some ways, that's the one man's campaign to get rid of the saxophone word. But try to do it without causing a kerfuffle.
I hear
you. Because if, you know what, go ahead and say gamification. Say it all day long for all I care.
But it makes baby Jesus cry.
It does. Anyway, I'm reading this. Oh gosh, it tied into what you were saying. Like, okay, so
trusting yourself, having faith that you can get through the thing.
Yeah, and so what she's, one of her approaches to providing arguments and in a sectioned manner for her overall thesis that, well, what is so incredibly strong about games that yet in reality and how society and culture, you know, face when we do something, you know, difficult or challenging or boring or repetitive, how come games can turn this stuff into something useful or engaging and whatever? And so she's analyzing it from five different ways, I think. And I don't have them memorized yet, but it's, yeah, she's characterizing different, you know, traits that, what was it called? It's the, what you're describing is sort of a, it's like a pragmatic form of optimism, which is incredibly useful to learn things.
Yes. I love that way of describing it because, this last couple weeks in my hours between putting out fires and solving deadlines and drawing things for other people, I've been working on the pitch draft for Boulder and Fleet. And I did draft one, and I had my wife look at it, had a couple friends look at it, and they were like, it's got problems. And so then I went, oh, crap, I look at it through your eyes, and it does have problems. So then I think, okay, well, I'm going to solve those problems, and I do another draft. And then I give it to my wife, and she says, oh, I don't know what you did, but you just sucked all the joy out of this thing. This is, you did not have fun writing this, and I had no fun reading it. And here's all the moments where it was like, well, that's no fun, that's no fun. And this isn't my wife being, you know, ridiculously cruel to me. This is her being very honest with me. And when I looked, and afterwards I thanked her, and she was like, what are you thanking me for? But anyway, I think I talked about this before. But what I'm describing here is, man, when I looked at that draft again, and I realized strike two, that felt terrible, man. It not because, well, partially because my whole sense of self-worth is tied around this ability to create things, right? That's problem one. Mm-hmm. But part of it was, is that the work ahead became this unseeable mound, right? It's this huge mound where I don't know its dimensions yet. When I had that draft done, I felt like, okay, the mound's only this big now. I've got most of the problems sorted. So this mound is, I can do this. But then it became suddenly this huge, like, oh, what, it just went past the clouds. I can't see the top of this thing. And that doesn't feel good. I knew I could get through it. I knew that, consciously that in 3 weeks' time, I'm going to be past this, but it still sucks to be here. Does that make sense? Right? Yeah, it's not like, yeah, hey, we could do it. I'm happy all the time. I'm Jersey, everybody. It was more like, oh, God. Oh, God. I'm going to have to get a root canal in the morning, right? Like that kind of feeling. Like, you know that you're going to come out on the other side and it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Doesn't take away that you're going to have to sit in that chair for 2 hours with your jaw cocked open with a bunch of plastic stuff in your mouth, right?
Indeed.
That's pragmatic optimism. At least to me.
Yeah. I mean, you know that you won't die.
Yeah.
You know, and that likely you will be changed for the better and you'll have other benefits besides.
Yeah. So anyway, that was all that was to say is that I knew that we could get through an extra lean without any prep whatsoever. have you checked out? I had this actually on my list of things to bring up with you on the extra lean. I just found out about this today. C.me, SEE.me.
I have not checked this out. What is it?
I don't know how to feel. It seems like every couple of weeks, one of these things pops up. And I hope I don't sound too cynical about this, but it just seems like with things like Flatter, trying to think of some other ones, these like social monetization kind of sites. So See Me is sort of like Pinterest for creatives, where it's like Pinterest, maybe I shouldn't compare it to that because I don't even understand Pinterest yet. I'm still trying to suss out what Pinterest is, but it looks Pinterest-ish because it's like a bunch of tiles, images, but it's a site for creatives to post their stuff and allow it to be socially shared. It ties into Facebook and all that stuff, but they're supposedly working on some kind of engine to where instead of just giving you a thumbs up, people can tip you. There's some kind of tipping mechanism built in and it's encouraged on this site.
Okay. Interesting.
So you create a the moment I read an article about it, I was like, well, I better go squat my name, you know, just in case. And so I'm at jersey.c.me if you really want to look. But anyway, so I logged in and it's like you create an account and it says like, okay, what kind of stuff do you make? Do you make art? Do you make music? Do you make video? What do you make? All right, I make art. I'm like, okay, well, here's your interface. Start uploading images. And then when you upload images, there's like all sorts of sharing buttons. There's a Tumblr sharing button, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera. But then there's also a button that says contribute to support my work. Mm. So I don't think that thing is finished yet. But anyway, my question for you is, and I totally blindsided you with this. This is almost curveball kind of stuff. What do you think about this movement towards different services where there's an explicit front-ended sort of support the artist's work by giving them a micropayment of some sort? Like Gumroad, like C.me, like Flatter, right?
Well, I read the book, Beyond Comics, right? Or what was it called?
Reinventing Comics.
Reinventing Comics. There you go. Reinventing Comics by Scott McCloud.
Yeah.
And, so I have been waiting for this to happen for a while. sorry. And I'm remembering that Penny Arcade really, gave Scott some guff about
Well, what was it? BitPass. Wasn't that the micropayment service that McLeod positioned himself like squarely behind? Do you remember this?
Yeah. I mean, I think he did pick a specific platform, but I do believe he was just saying in general. And it's tough. I mean, this is one of those things where, you know, if you really think about a certain problem and imagine how basically if you just get into strategic thinking about like, where do I want to be? What industry, what's the industry that I want to be in? What's it going to change? Maybe what, and so you might come up with some well-founded expectations or predictions, or maybe they'll be likely, there'll be a mix where some will be crazy and inaccurate and others will, you know, have some footing. And, but then to an observer, whatever, like to me, I heard the part where I think Scott has some practical, some good reason behind this. And yeah, I see it coming to pass. I would love it for it to come to pass soon, but even when it didn't, I didn't freak out and make fun of him. but anyway, so do I think that's, yeah, I think let's see, providing a way that is a decentralized, more direct relationship manner between audience and artist is by and large really good, especially when we're talking about the small transactions and you're delivering an uncomplicated service or experience really conveniently, and then with the option to also really conveniently and fairly, you know, trade for some small payment. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome.
And yeah, I think it's, and it's all we're doing. So what that replaces, it doesn't replace, it enhances the centralized distribution model. So just provides another avenue for artists. And for, well, heck, look at Etsy, right? I mean, so think about what Etsy did for crafting communities. Mm-hmm. Created a, well, our Etsy or Kickstarter being the more hot button one. Because Kickstarter is essentially Etsy for business models. I've got a bigger idea and I have a venue that is supported by many people who are able to, you know, buy into to some extent this big idea. And I don't know, it's great. I mean, these are awesome platforms. eBay's been around. PayPal. I mean, so we've got ways to do easy, sort of easy payments, but these C.me is tackling this from a more what are they trying to do here? They're making it.
The metaphor I read in the article that sent me there is the street performer. Right, you walk in on the street. There's a guy playing the cello. You throw a quarter into his hat, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And this is a place where, if you want to see neat stuff, and just do some walk by. This is what Pinterest supposedly is about. And correct me if I'm wrong here, Rob, because you actually I think get some use out of it, whereas I'm still looking at it and scratching my head. It's a place to browse a bunch of neat images and grab the ones you like and put them in folders. Whereas this is about browsing neat images and finding neat artistic creative content and being able to flip them a buck when you like what you see.
Yeah, I guess it is. Okay. So, it's not only the buck, it's, people. Let's see. You're getting someone to, okay. So now I'm thinking back to the, another book that I actually have gone through twice recently, which is, Daniel H. Pink's, To Sell as Human. But I just want to credit where I got this from or whatever, but he really emphasizes that when you're selling, it's not only just for currency, right? You're moving someone and causing them to part with a resource. That resource could be money, but it could also be time, or it could be their acknowledgement or other such similar small efforts, like, well, retweeting or sharing a link or blogging about what you posted, or you know, liking it, repinning it, whatever the whatever that verb is
for that ecosystem.
Ecosystem, yeah. So actually, I would say like the street performer is, it's interesting because, but it really breaks down because it's almost like, you can't aggregate street performers because streets are stuck where they're at.
Right, that's true. unless you get like a Soylent Green style, a tractor to push them all into one area in the middle of Central Park, and here's street performer pavilion, right?
Sure. There's okay. So then there you go. Then you're just wrangling them.
So, but okay. But here's my question about this that I had. I mean, so we've gone through. I think you did a good job of identifying like fact that microtransactions or micropayments or easy to use mechanisms to support the creative types is a good idea. I think we would both, of course, agree with that. My thoughts are, as I look at this thing and look at this idea of essentially like micro patronage, and here's an aggregation of people to patronize. Who's going to use this besides creative people? I mean, who's going to go to this site and say like, I'll create like a wallet of $5 and I'll just browse this site and look at neat stuff and then tip people. Are people going to do that? I mean, because like, I don't want to be cynical here, Rob, but it's just like, aren't most services, like you think about like the Facebook where it's all about like, I'm going to dress up my wall. I'm going to put up an awesome cover photo and I'm going to put all these great pictures of me. And, you know, it's all about dressing up yourself for the public. This is about others. There's an implicit selflessness about participating on that site if you're not a creative person. You see what I'm saying?
Okay. Let's see. If you're not a creative person, yeah, I mean, so you may have a hard time with this, although it's interesting. I can't tell as much like how distinct this is from Pinterest, because it seems mighty similar as far as its capabilities, because I actually didn't even see the micropayment stuff yet from clicking.
No, it's not there yet. It's something that they're rolling out soon. And I was kind of dismayed when I signed up for my account. I was like, oh, I wouldn't have signed up so fast. And I found out. You find out after you sign up. It's like, oh, this feature's coming.
Yeah. It's okay. So what would you be providing? Why do people pay for content? People pay for content for what? For convenience. And for they feel some kind of desire to reciprocate due to, you know, the whole gift economy thing, where because they have received. Okay, so it's giving back to something that really, like, for instance, like I've watched so much Homestar Runner, I feel forever indebted to those guys.
They did a good job.
The Brothers Chaps. Yeah. And anyway.
No. Yeah. And you know what? I mean, other people feel the same way about them. Like, I got a friend who loves Homestar Runner. He bought the Strong Bad CD when it came out. Mm-hmm. And he told me, oh, you got to listen to it. And I said, hey, send me a few sample tracks so I can find out what it is. He's like, no. He's like, you buy it. Yeah. And he's like, if you really want to listen to it, most of that stuff's on the website. There's not that much in the CD that isn't on the website. I'll send you links to that, but no, I am not sending you tracks. Like, he felt like this obligation to them to not pirate their music, even though I was saying I just wanted to sample.
Well, you could just, I assume you didn't live in the same town or something, because then you just go tootling about town and crank I Got Mad at the Cheat.
Which, so I did. I wound up going out and buying it because of that. But anyway, no, I get that, because I put some stuff up on Gumroad and I've had people who actually listened to the Lena Tart Show and bought the stuff. Like, I did like name your own price kind of thing, and they paid what I considered to be a lot more than what I would have priced it at, right? Hmm. And then they approached me with this attitude of like, you know, well, I just want to pay you back for the stuff you did for me, right? I get that gift economy kind of thing. But like, what I get confused about when I look at the See Me thing is that when you set it up, I guess there's nothing on the main page that says anything about support people with money, right? It looks like they're positioning it as like cool images here, right? It's like Pinterest, and there's an iOS app.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at the language they're using right now, so one thing I think about is Pinterest surprised the heck out of everybody, and anyone who says they saw it coming is totally full of crap. But Pinterest essentially has a giant female audience. Like, to the once they started sharing their demographics, everyone freaked out and made their popularity even more huge, because they're like, how did you do this or whatever? So they made a site that was sort of like the digital equivalent to scrapbooking, and they found a way to make it feel like a worthwhile, exciting activity I wonder, like, who was the initial influential group of women that started using Pinterest or whatever, but, like, I mean, it really spread. So it's like, who is going into that community? Who is supporting it? Pinterest started from outside. Like, it wasn't like, oh, webcomic folks found Pinterest and said, well, here's another place to put my stuff. Mm-hmm. And then only those folks hung out. It just started from, like, there are many, many, many different communities out, you know, in the world at large. So I'm curious, when I see me, like, who are they trying to appeal to? And I see share and discover creative talent. And because of my day job, I think, oh, creative directors are going to hunt here for just inspiration.
Hmm. Hmm.
And maybe people to contract with.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and then there's, when you scroll down to the bottom, it says see more creatives. That's interesting language that they use there.
Just through the terminology, it feels like maybe that's what they're trying to do. Maybe they're trying to be an entertaining venue, but I don't see that here. This looks more resume-like and portfolio-like to me.
I think you're hitting close to the mark there, because when I uploaded some images to my account, I was kind of dismayed to see that, oh, you can't make galleries. It's single images. And so I wanted to put a comic on there, because mm-hmm. that's what I want people to see and support of that I do. Mm-hmm. But I could put a sequence of pages, but they're not grouped in any way. And I was kind of like, oh, so this is more like just putting up art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very portfolio-like.
So
yeah, and so Pinterest actually has collections, so you could do that more on Pinterest than you could here then.
Interesting. Good observations, Rob.
Yeah, cool. And the other thing is, like, when big existing communities or venues, you know, spawn projects, then you can expect more of a more interesting salad of people showing up compared to, you know, mostly one vegetable.
Yeah. It feels, this is just something that I keep an eye out for, is like new methods to do the online tipping thing. I'm always fascinated by that, and I'm waiting for the thing to come along. And I guess Bitcoin is the closest we've got right now, where you don't have to buy a wallet, right? Okay, I got to log in. I got to connect my PayPal account or my credit card to this thing. I have to pay in every month to make sure I got money in there. And now I can go and start tipping people. That's a lot of hoops to make me jump through when I just want to give people a buck for a thing. You know what I mean?
It really is. And I think it could be perhaps different motivations and whatnot. I hear that somehow, oh gosh, it's one of those kudos systems or whatnot that's really popular in Europe, I guess. Mm. But it's escaping me. But it's a tipping system, and not as popular among, you know, folks in the U.S. But so it could be a cultural thing too. Just saying, well, you know, we aren't as used to it yet.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't seem worth it. I don't know.
Do you have a Flatter account?
Flatter. That's what it is.
Oh, okay.
Flatter.
What you were saying sounded a lot like Flatter. And
my God.
Flatter.
Yep.
I ran a flatter button on my website a while back, and then something with my WordPress installation wouldn't work with it, so I had to take it off. But what I started to do instead, and I'm doing this very quietly, and I feel like, okay, well, Extra Lean is like a place where only people really, really interested in us go. So it's safe to talk about it here without me being like, oh, I'm promoting a big thing. But what I started doing is in the Comics Are Great shows, I'm putting a link to the Gumroad listing for The Front, my 197-page graphic novel. And it's just like, support the show, or like tip the show and get a comic, right? And you can pay nothing and get the PDF for free. But if anybody is invested enough in the show and delighted enough by the show to click that link, odds are they're going to give me a buck or two. And then they get a comic in exchange, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like, I like this idea of tipping and getting a thing in exchange.
Totally, yeah. Getting wallpaper downloads for
a
PayPal donation kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I should set up something like that too. Mm-hmm. I should set up something with like a PayPal. But the problem with that is then doesn't like that has to go to a secure page, doesn't it? An HTTPS page on your site.
No. Mm-mm.
I thought when you complete the PayPal transaction, you can set a page for it to take them to say, "Oh, your purchase is complete. Here's the thing you get."
But the final thank you page has to be HTTPS. Not for
last time I used it, like when I had like a shopping cart button on one of my sites. This was years ago. This is like 4 years ago, maybe.
Okay, or it could be a limitation of having a shopping cart versus like a single item.
Maybe. Too.
I don't know.
I'll have to play with that. But yeah, after playing around with Gumroad and getting some people actually like, you know, happy to support my efforts when I make it easy for them to get a thing. And Gumroad's not exactly easy because you still got to like plug in credit card details into to get stuff on Gumroad.
Yeah, but it's a well-designed, it's really well-designed.
It is.
There's sign-up forms and then there's sign-up forms, right?
Yeah, you're right.
It's well, really well designed.
Yeah, but after having a little bit of like positive interactions with that, I'm like, you know, it would be nice to have some kind of mechanism on my website to say like, hey, do you like the stuff I do, and you'd like to support me? Because I mean, I also think about like there's people out there who listen to stuff that I've done or watch stuff that I've done or read stuff that I've done, who don't necessarily want to reach out to me on Twitter, you know. Or don't necessarily want to write an email. I mean, I'm one of those guys. There are plenty of people whose work I really, really enjoy, but I have no desire to talk with them because I don't really have anything to say to them except I love the stuff that you do. And so, like, for instance, like the comedian Paul F. Tompkins, he does the Paul F. Tomcast, free podcast. I love it. I adore it. Wait anxiously for every new episode. And so you know what happens? Whenever he's got a new album, bam, I'm getting it because I want to, you know, support him somehow, but I don't necessarily like at tweet them, go like, hey, Paul F. Tompkins, I think you're the best, you know? So I think about like, there's those users too, right? Who are like consuming or enjoying or participating in my stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, you've been doing this for how many years and yeah, you put a lot of awesome stuff out there. I think it's a great idea. It's taken me a while to get used to, well, it just, the donation thing has always given me a little bit of a ooky feeling.
Did you, I'm sure you've heard of this, but I don't know if you've watched it yet. Yes. I'm going to mention a TED talk, Amanda Palmer, The Art of Asking.
I think we chatted about this a little bit, but yeah, I got to check it out. Refresh my, memory.
Okay. There's only two parts of the talk that stand out vividly. Is one, I'll start with the part that made me feel really uncomfortable. Is she was doing some kind of performance art where she took off all of her clothes and had people just like put their hands all over her. Like the whole idea was this expression of intimacy between artist and audience.
Okay.
And all I'm thinking is strangers' hands on me. Yeah.
Yeah.
I missed her point there, but one of the things she talks about earlier in the talk is this idea of the art of asking is saying, like, going back to street performance, putting a bucket in front of you and then doing a thing and then you know, people can decide to put money in the bucket or not. But she said the moment anybody put money in the bucket, she would stop whatever she was doing and make direct eye contact with that person, not even necessarily saying anything, but just have this moment of connection, right? You supported what I'm doing. Mm. There's a connection between us now, right? And so she talks about this thing of like saying, like, by just, and Amanda Palmer, she also ran that really wildly successful Kickstarter, raised a whole boatload of money. Mm. But that's what she kicks off with is this idea of the art of asking is rephrasing the idea of like, support me. This is hard work. What I do is hard and it deserves monetization. It deserves compensation. But to say, no, this, I'm offering you the opportunity to have a connection with me, right? And when you change that whole definition of what's really happening when somebody exchanges money with you, boy, right?
Yeah, wow. Mental models are powerful. And that is a huge difference. Because we do have this, I love that. And I really got to check it out. Because I would love to find my own flavor of that. And like, well, what is this? What is the value I'm sharing, and how do I put that in a way that is just super, you know, reaching out and trying to not pander, but just really touch a given audience with what I'm trying to accomplish, and say, hey, we're on the same page, and you can be part of this too, in a way beyond just the being in the audience. You can also like contribute to making it continue to exist or whatever, right? I'm just kind of fumbling for my...
This is the David Say book cover.
It totally is. Yeah.
We talked about this.
Yep.
And he got my money because he said, I'm writing a book. If you want to be in on this, you want to have skin in this game, mm-hmm. you can essentially purchase sort of stock in my book. And you'll get by donate or by contributing money to this PayPal account, you will get a PDF with your name on it saying, I'm a contributor to this book. I'm a producer of this book. Okay, I'm going to finish this thought, then I'm going to go to another thought that mm-hmm. supports this. And what he was defining the interaction as is, this is you throwing your skin in the game. I'm throwing my skin in the game by giving you my money. It matters to me whether or not your book succeeds or fails. You could say that's paying his advance on the book, but that's a different mental model.
Different too. Mental model. It's yep. so much of it's predicated on like, we are somehow now I am the centralized publishing entity and I'm bestowing this honor upon
right.
it. You're not. It's a very different situation.
Here's a show I haven't talked about in a long time and I haven't listened to it in a while, but I still to this day think they have one of the most interesting business models for content creators to be found, and that's the No Agenda podcast, which is a sort of political comedy show. But the way they define the mental model they operate on is that they very snarkily point out that in Hollywood, to be a producer, all you have to do is give money to creative people to make their thing happen. Then you're a producer, right? You produced this show because you made it happen because you gave money to make the thing. Mm-hmm. He said, so you can be a producer on our show, and we will even give you producer credit on the show that you can put onto your resume to say, hey, I produce a media show called No Agenda. And then they even create different tiers of producers, like you're an executive producer, you're an assistant producer, and so on, defined by different amounts that people contribute to the show.
Cool. Okay.
And then they also do this thing called knighthoods where it's like if you contribute $1,000, honest to God, $1,000 to the show, then they will knight you. You know what knighting is? They play music on the show and then they play sound effects of them pulling a sword out of a sheath and then tapping you on the shoulders and announcing that you're a knight. But it's participation. It's skin in the game. It's now you're in. You're inside mm-hmm. of our circle kind of idea, right?
Right, right.
Totally different thing than saying like support this thing because it matters. Support the. Do you listen to NPR or watch PBS ever?
PBS sometimes.
Okay. You've seen those pledge drives.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, like this is a really important content that is culturally significant and is making the world a better place. And if you don't support it, it's gonna go away. And then, and you know, you're kind of a thief if you don't pay for it. You know, it's like they play all of these cards that are like, mm-hmm. dude, you're just ticking me off.
Exactly. It's a negative confrontation.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like by turning it around and saying like, I'm offering you the opportunity to have a direct connection with me and whatever language you throw on that, that's interesting. And dude, I played with this exact thing on the Thunder Punch Daily show. When I did that, I did a thing where I did an extra Thunder Punch Daily, a longer version with a little bit more of like a more formatted lecture based on one of my classroom experience, like the kind of lectures I do in my classrooms. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm going to put it on Gumroad. And I think I said like it's a buck or something like that. I think I said I threw like a dollar price tag on it. So that it's not, you can't just get it for free. But, you know, I said, think of it as you're tipping me. But by tipping me, you get a thing. And because Gumroad gives me your email address, I now know who you are. And I know that you support me. And I'm going to have an open channel to you. Or rather, you're going to have an open channel to me. So if you have things that you want me to respond to on the show, I'm going to be more attentive to that than anybody else. Like some guy on Twitter just says, hey, Jersey, could you talk about this on the show? Cool. I'll put that on my list. But the guy who supports me, he's going to have the number to the red phone, you know? Or gal, for that matter.
Yeah.
And so I phrased it that way, and a couple people bit. You know, I'm not going to say that I didn't make, you know, I didn't make Maker's Mark money, but I made Turkey Hill money.
I have no idea what that means.
I didn't get to get the good bourbon. I got the cheap bourbon. I got the hooch.
Okay. Gotcha. That's funny. I assumed it was some PBS reference.
We can tell who's the drinker between the two of us.
No comment. So... let's see. I am German, so.
I'm guessing. Okay, let's close with this. Let's close with some personal trivia.
Okay.
Are you a beer man, a wine man, or a liquor man? I'm guessing a beer man.
I was a beer man, and now I am a, a Trader Joe's wine man.
Oh. You get the $3, Chuck?
I splurge on the $6.
Dude, don't even make that face, because $3 Chuck is a staple in my house.
No, I do the $3 Chuck too as well, but I don't know.
Sometimes you
go, I look crazy for the pretty pictures on the bottles. I mean, that's, if you stick with the $3 Chuck, you get the same picture all the time.
That's true. The Charles Shaw has a boring label.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about Trader Joe's is that they've got a lot of really cool wines that you can't find at, you know, Kroger or Walmart or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I'm with you there.
So how about you, Jersey?
Okay, well, before we finish with you, reds, whites?
Reds.
Zinfandels?
Reds. I at least try to pay attention. I really should journal this.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, just, I don't know. I'm a geek, and I like to learn even when I'm drinking. there's some of those labels contain some mighty fine, beverages inside, and others are not that good.
Yeah.
So I've typically noticed in the range of like, Merlots and blends and cabs. Yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Same here. If you can ever find it, we used to get at Trader Joe's, a Cabernet called Bear's Lair.
Oh.
Which we got just because it had bears on the label, but it turned out to be a really, really great, like $4 wine. So nice. Cheap, but so good. So
brilliant.
But I like beer, but not that. I'm not crazy about it. I'm not like, mm-hmm. I'm going to get a 12-pack. When I do get it, I like to get like just like a six pack of like a dark, dark stout. And I discovered this brewery. There's a Detroit brewery called Atwater Brewery, and they make a vanilla Java porter. Which is like the best thing I've ever put in my mouth in my life. Like when I got it because already, I mean, vanilla Java porter sounds pretty good. And then I opened it up and it was the first time I ever drank a beer and made an involuntary kind of like, oh my God. thought I was kidding.
She's is like, this local or something? What's this business? Vanilla?
Atwater Brewery. Atwater. I hope they have them in your area, but if not, I will have to bring you some when I finally come out to Minneapolis.
Cool. You know, you reminded me of one years ago. It left a really big impression on me. So I'm not against most any form of alcohol, basically, right?
Okay.
I'm telling you, like, I'll have wine on hand nowadays.
Okay.
I had a similar experience, and it had vanilla in it. And it was a local, or I think it's local to San Francisco. Maybe it's a chain out there. I don't know, but it was called the Thirsty Bear. Yet this another bear connection, right? What the heck? I was out there for the game developers conference, right? And you know, went for a walk with the friend of mine. We're both working on our game and enjoying the San Francisco and all that kind of stuff. And what was the place called? Is the place called the Thirsty Bear? I think. But I remember it now. It was actually a golden vanilla something. And so it is
a restaurant. It's in San Francisco, Thirsty Bear Brewery.
There you go. Yeah, and it was microbrew, brewed on site. So anyway. And
golden vanilla?
Yeah, it was amazing.
Something about vanilla and beer just works.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know what it is, but anyway. Hope we didn't offend anybody with our talk about alcohol.
Yeah, it's cool if you don't have to partake. Just enjoy the vanilla.
Would it surprise anybody to find out that neither Rob nor I are the kind of guys who crack open a beer and pour it on our heads and scream?
Exactly.
I don't think either of us are in the ballpark of raging alcoholism. Just
no, but drink responsibly and all that.
Enjoy responsibly.
Exactly. Enjoy responsibly and at the very least, be calculated about your irresponsibility.
Yes, there we go. That's a great way of putting it. Okay. See? Faith pays off.